Welcome to Criminal Thinking Deterred with your host, Tony Moore. Here we talk about how to take responsibility for your decisions, stop hurting people, become a positive force in your community, and end the criminal thinking that deters everyone.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of our Criminal Thinking Deterred. I'm with my good friend and mentor, Brian Lobe, and it's glad to have you on the show, Brian. Good to see you again. I'm with my two producers, Earl and Phil. So I think we're going to have a very good show here today. So Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get involved with Criminal Thinking Deterred?
Wow, that's a good question. That goes back some years. I was born a poor white child in northern Wisconsin. No, not really. I got involved with Criminal Thinking Deterred when I started, when I finished my psychology degree from the University of, actually Marquette University. And my first job out of college was working at a women's halfway house as a night monitor. I was the first male actually that they ever hired. And that was back in the 90s, early mid 90s, something like that. And I really liked it. And I really liked the idea of that kind of getting exposed to the drug and alcohol counseling kind of perspective. And so I went back and got a certification from Milwaukee Area Technical College, actually, as a certified alcohol and drug counselor. And then kind of worked my way up into drug and alcohol counseling. That was kind of like how I first got involved.
So you started with alcohol and drug counseling. How did that relate to your criminal thinking training and approaches to using alcohol drug counseling?
Great question. So I got first exposed to the criminal thinking counseling kind of concept or approach when I got a job with Rock Valley Correctional Programs in Beloit, Wisconsin. And that program was an outpatient treatment program for adult women and men on probation and parole. And they used the criminal thinking change model developed by Dr. Stanton Samenow and Yokelson.
Yes.
In their three volumes of the criminal personality. They were the first treatment program to put that concept into practice in an outpatient setting. So I actually had learned about them through some of my work with when I was working with Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan. And I put an application. I really wanted to get into that whole criminal side of the recovery process, because I was working in a women's halfway house, people on corrections, probation and parole. And I started learning about, they actually used that, some of the models and teachings from Dr. Samenow and Yokelson. And when that program opened up in Beloit, when I learned about it, I took the opportunity to put an application in. I was driving to work like an hour and a half every day just to get down there, because I was really interested in learning that whole approach. And I was there for a couple of years before they kind of transitioned to the program, but it was like a major education in the whole cognitive behavioral thinking approach to working with adult men and women on probation and parole who also had alcohol and drug issues.
Yes. Yokelson and Samenow are known for Inside the Criminal Mind. That's one of their big books that's nationally known. If you ever want to get out there and pick that up and get into Samenow and Yokelson, that would be a good book to start with. Now, how was it working with women and men? Was there a different approach to dealing with the...
We use the same approach, but I would say there's a kind of different types of arrays of criminal thinking factors that are prevalent in women versus men. There's the same kind of criminal thinking changes that needed to be made, but there's different types of games, you know, that people play. Mm-hmm. When they're going through the addiction process. So for example, in the women's halfway house, using sex as a manipulation kind of tactic was more common working with women in the halfway house, trying to, you know, be manipulative in that kind of way, especially with with male staff, was something they had to be very, very conscious and aware of.
Yeah, that's a constant when you're dealing with criminal behavior in the prisons too, male and female. Both sides, males will use flirtations against the female counselors, and the same within a women's prison, the females will use it against the male counselors to try to engage a favorable interaction with the counselor, which is definitely a no-no when you're talking about therapy. So when you're dealing with the criminal thinking, have you dealt with it in the prison and in the community as a counselor?
I didn't work in the prisons. I have worked in the jails, Racine and Kenosha County Jail. I did some interviews, you know, in the prisons, like for people coming out of the prison. So we would into like a community-based correctional program. And so as like a halfway house manager or an outpatient treatment program provider, I would go in and do interviews with people, you know, coming out of prison or coming out of jail. So that was my only experience really working in the prisons, is doing interviews of people kind of doing kind of like a pre-release into a community-based organization.
Okay. Like when you worked at the Alcohol and Drug Counselor at Council, and you were the director or the coordinator for the Living Free program when you were there?
I oversaw the Living Free program. I was, my role, my actual title working for the, at that time, right, it was the Alcohol and Other Drug Council of Kenosha County, Wisconsin, long name.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the Hope Council, right?
Mm-hmm. Hope Council.
So when I was there, I was the director of the DUI program, the assessments.
Okay.
Director of assessments. And so I oversaw the staff that did the DUI assessments for people who had, you know, had a first time or second time offense, you know, driving under the influence. And so part of that responsibility was also overseeing the Living Free program, where you and I went into the Kenosha County jails.
Yeah, that's where I first really met you and developed a relationship with you as a friend, and then as a as a counselor in a therapeutic setting. And I watched you deliver the errors in thinking, criminal thinking concept. And I had got some information while I was in my last incarceration at RCI about thinking for a change. And when I seen you deliver it, it just opened me up to understand what was necessary for me. That worked for me was the accountability piece, because criminal thinking makes you accountable for your own thinking. The thought process is always something that's prevalent that comes out of nowhere randomly. But the thinking is an intentional thing that you do, that you push forward. What you decide to think on or how you decide to unpack it is up to you, and that's your accountability piece. When you gave me that helped me.
So that was a long time ago. So let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Flip the script a little bit. So how long had you been out? Because that was like 15 years ago, isn't it?
Longer than that.
2025.
That was 1998.
Okay. How long had you been out of your most recent incarceration when you were involved in that Living Free program?
It took, I got out in 1995. It took a year. Remember, it took us a whole year to get me back in the jail with Pastor Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
She got me in after a year, but it was almost 18 months. And then I was going back in to the Living Free program that I was involved in before I went to prison. It helped me get my feeding, so that when I went to prison, I was a better inmate, because I was seeking knowledge now and I was seeking opportunity to grow. Prison saved my life.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because it put me on the right track to understand that there was a better way to live. And I had been in five times. That was my fifth time.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And this is when my daughter came in and she provoked a thought. She asked me how come I couldn't take care of her, and I couldn't answer her, because I didn't have enough information on what I was going to do with my own life. But when she asked me, Daddy, how come you can't take care of me? It made me go about thinking about, I need to do something different with me so that I can be able to take care of her.
You know, that
it wasn't the responsibility of taking care of her. It was the responsibility of taking care of me. Don't take care of her.
Those first days when we started going into the jail together was really eye-opening for me as well. Someone like you kind of co-facilitating with me those education sessions. Like, we did alcohol and drug education. We did criminal thinking and errors, kind of therapeutic type groups in the men's, cells. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was really kind of eye-opening for me was the power of having diversity in a treatment setting, like you being African-American, myself being white, myself not being recovering from alcohol and drugs, but you coming, out of that culture. And so we were able to kind of come at them from like the book perspective, as they would say, like O'Brien's giving us the book knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tony giving the, personal experience, kind of backing up, some of the therapeutic approaches that I was talking about, and then you talking about living them out in reality. It kind of helped prevent them from, it helped really, in my experience, it really helped them to understand the, there was no kind of way for them to minimize my experiences not being in recovery, or minimize your experience of you're just like this, you can't tell us anything. So we kind of came at them from a team perspective, which is so important in treatment approach.
Yeah. And with the errors in thinking as a therapeutic model, it gets you to thinking it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, it's where you're going and how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
So let's change your thinking so that we can get better. It doesn't matter if a baby walks in your group and talks about something that's positive, that baby who has never experienced anything got some good information to give you. So it's for us to receive it. If you've been affected by a behavior that causes you to lose everything, then you need to be listening to somebody other than someone who's just been there, because they're still stuck there. So if I can hear it from you, Brian, someone who's just said, okay, I made a choice to deal with consequences differently because I didn't want to walk in your shoes. I don't want to walk in those shoes. Why would I want to walk in your shoes to find out what it feels like? And once you begin to understand that, then you can change your life. I believe as an ex-offender going through the program, I'm in the Living Free program now. As I got I got your position that you once had in 96. I'm the program coordinator for the Living Free program. Six different programs that we run now is we run the DUI program, the anger management, the criminal thinking, maleness to manhood, fatherhood program. So we're running those programs, and we also do it for the women and give the criminal thinking approaches to them in the Kenosha County Jail. I also work as the Windows to Work coach as a reentry program in Racine at the Racine Correctional Institute. That's the prison. Well, that's a reintegration program. And I get a chance to use some of the concepts with the Cincinnati approach. Cincinnati got thinking for a change. And I use some of our criminal thinking approach intertwined with some of their thoughts on how to think better, how to do better, how to be better. And I'm so thankful that I had an opportunity to get this from you now that I've been back to college and got my degree, my master's degrees in business and in mental health, with the criminal thinking approach as my primary mode of therapy. I have been very successful with getting clients or individuals to see that there is a different way to live. And being a successful recovering person, a lot of folks will tell me, man, I want what you got. And I can just tell them that it's not a hard thing. It's just be able to commit to your thinking and process that. You know, we used to have a saying, play the tape all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
To the reward, find the consequences. Do it deliver you to the consequences that you desire? So as a business person, Brian, how do you process now that you're into your life and your strategies and on the internet and all of those good things, and you help grow programs? Do you use some of the thinking behind the criminal thinking to push you?
You know, that's one of the biggest takeaways, I think, from that first career in my life with the learning those criminal thinking errors. One of the things I learned was everyone has those thinking errors. Everyone has those criminal thinking errors, not just criminals, quote unquote. And so putting myself in that position and understanding my own closed channel thinking, my own victim stance, I use that philosophy today. It's helped me really change my mind and helped my business grow. So when, for example, when I have a client, what I'm doing now is fairly, although I do manage the criminalthinking.net website, so I still have my fingers in it. I'm on a board of directors for a great nonprofit in Kenosha called Birds of a Feather. And so I still have my fingers, you know, connected to the recovery community. Actually, some of my biggest clients now as a web developer and as a social media strategist are therapy organizations. I work with Colmac Integrated Behavioral Health on the East Coast. I work with the Counseling Center of Maryland is one of my larger clients. And so I have kind of geared towards, you know, helping and working with in therapy and counseling business, you know, counseling organizations since then. But I think that the biggest thing for me that's really helped my own business is really learning those thinking errors and also learning not to take what somebody says personally. I always said in groups, you know, what you say to me tells me more about you than what it does about me. And not taking anything personal, and you know, if somebody puts me down or somebody tries to manipulate me, and this is in business too. This is not just in, you know, counseling and drug treatment, but in business, you know, something, if I have a client that gets irate because their website went down and they start you know, berating me or my staff or something, I take it absolutely zero personally. I kind of look at it objectively. It tells me something about them, about where they're at. And then I can, you know, respond in a, you know, caring, compassionate way. One of the concepts that we learn in treatment, we talk about in treatment is instead of confrontation, we talk about carefrontation, right? We're confronting you with your thinking because we care, not because we're trying to harm you. And so I've used that kind of approach in business and with my business networking group as well. Like, we're holding people accountable to the policies, to the process that we use in business, and holding my staff accountable. It's like I'm giving them feedback, positive feedback, right? Pointing out things that need to improve because I care. It's a carefrontation kind of process.
Yes. And great leadership, if you're using this approach, the accountability to self is, how do I help someone get a better thinking, even though they may be off? How do I help you find yourself with loving on you enough to, so that you can look at yourself and say, well, hold on, wait a minute, maybe I'm being too harsh by this. For me as a business person and opening four clinics now and doing other entrepreneur type things, it has elevated my thinking because I'm always thinking of the accountability piece, quality service. You want to always give the best service to anybody that you serve so that they be happy with what you gave them. That's not them doing anything for you, but that's what's in you because of your thinking process and your process. I like what you said about taking the zero emotional out of it, because most people have a hard time with the emotional side of it. They think that they got to act a certain way to get a certain result. Well, I need to remove my emotional, whatever I have for you, because it's not for you. It's me dealing with what's coming out of me towards what you're saying. What you're saying is your opinion and you're entitled to it. So let me get away from that. And that's not my business. I heard a speaker say, what someone think about you is not your business.
True.
You're going to be successful with it.
Yep.
Exactly. And go to the next level. So now that you have developed clientele and all of those things, where do you see the field going now with the criminal thinking, errors and thinking approach? Do you think it's going to be a usable in the future with all of the new cyberspace and virtual and all the things that's going? Can it still be a usable approach that we can use to help people?
You know, that's the same question that we got back in the 90s. Like, is this going to be a sustainable approach? Is this approach to change? Is it outcome driven? Is it still having results? And I think the results of it are in those outcomes, in those measurable outcomes. That's where you can really know if you have a foundational kind of approach to change that is working. And in my opinion, you know, we have about close to 3,000 organizations across the country that are using this criminal thinking curriculum actively. Mm-hmm. They're actively on an email list, and these are organizations that are serving, you know, from drug courts to treatment programs to outpatient probation and parole programs, drug courts there that have really continued to use and see results, you know, with this cognitive behavioral therapy approach to changing the criminal mind. I don't know if I told you this, I still am in contact with Dr. Samino. He lives in Alexandria, Virginia, which is like an hour away from me.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still called on as a lecturer, as a speaker to talk. And he has a recent update to his Inside the Criminal Mind. I think it's a new updated edition out. So it's still being used as an approach in therapy and treatment across the country. And people are really hungry for that kind of knowledge. I really like, you know, what we've done with the criminalthinking.net website and this Criminal Thinking Deterred podcast is really providing free, you know, resources and material to people working with people with that population to help them. There's most curriculums available are paid services, and a lot of these programs are community-based driven. They don't have funding for it, and so we have this model that of treatment and or of material that people can use for free. They just have to request permission to get on our email list to use that content. And so I'm very encouraged that this is a lasting approach to affecting positive change in people's lives. What's your experience in using it?
My experience, and because I'm so passionate about it, has been very successful. Whenever I go through from every error in thinking, I go from victim stance all the way to criminal mind. And once I use them and I work with someone, they usually can identify one of the behaviors with themselves, and we can dive in. Fear is a big one, because a lot of people have a lot of fear about taking risks, because risk sounds like I may have to suffer some consequence. Well, risk is the only way you're going to be successful, is deal with good or bad behavior. Even in business and in relationships, you have to take risks. Sometimes you have to do things, especially like in relationships with significant others. You have to take risks to love on people when they may not love on you back, but you may have to get through that. And a lot of times ex-offenders come home, female and male, they don't know what to expect in a healthy, normal relationship.
Yep.
The space that is required.
So often people use that fear. They use that fear as to prevent them from doing things, right? To
yes.
make bad decisions. And the deterrent, the opposite of that, use fear as a guide. That fear is trying to tell you something. It's trying to tell you to get out of that situation. I should not be here. Or it's telling you, this is something new. I need to try it. This is something new. I need to embrace it, right?
Yes. There's a thing that we use too, is I use in my group, is two things. Jail is never an option. So we know that any behavior that puts you in line to go to jail is a no-no. Then the next one is, do the next right thing. If you continue to do the next right thing, you can open three clinics, you can open a podcast, you can have clothing lines, you can have stores, you can have relationships, you can own basketball teams. You can do a lot of the things that I was able to do because I just did the next right thing that became available that made sense to stay out of jail. So I've been out of jail now almost 30 years. Prior to that, I was a career criminal. I did 18 years across two decades of time, and I couldn't stop. Until I got an understanding of what criminal thinking deterred really truly mean, that if I don't take my criminal mind coming from the environment that I came from, which was full of survival skills to get money and crime and do things that would put you at risk, now I needed to perform those risks in a pro-social approach. How do I go back to school? Well, go to school. Step in the school door, go to school, and you go every single day until you get your grades. And once you do that, then you could do that in other areas of life, like go to work, get up and go to work. You get up to go get high, get up to go to work.
I like one of the things you always talk about with playing the tape all the way through. It makes me think of the ripple effect of your actions too. Like one of the change processes we use in groups is think about the ripple effect of that crime that you've done. A lot of people, like, they don't think about that. They just think of, they minimize, you know, the impacts of their negative behavior, but that ripple effect goes both ways. Like with your life, for example, the positive ripple effect of making that change and then looking at the impact, looking at the ripple effect of making that single change of making the right decision and how that can build on itself. The ripple effect, you know, goes both ways.
Well, you know, my daughter, like I said, she gave me that, "Daddy, how come you can't take care of me?" But what came with that was I was a tree and she was a branch. And she was saying, "I can't be a full-fledged branch because you won't be a tree. How can I grow if you won't teach me, Daddy? I can't get what I need because you won't be able to take the roots that you need to be a tree so I can become a full-fledged branch and give you the fruit from that branch that you're going to get as a father to create a legacy for yourself." And when she told me that, it just made everything make sense. I said, "Oh, I got to do better than this." But for the next 9 months while I was in prison facing 40 years, all I could think about is you have to get yourself together in order to take care of the branch. If you can't produce great sap for the branch, the branch is going to be rotten, but it still be a part of your tree. Yep. So if I couldn't teach her good stuff, and now many years later, she's on her own. She got an associate's degree. She's buying houses. She's the head of her office at her job and all of those things. And she calls me now and get advice on topics that's been tough for her, relationships, working, owning homes, doing those things. So she got someone to call that can give her the true knowledge of what it takes to move forward. Do she cry? Yeah, she cried, but she can get through it now because she can get that information. So that's the one thing about what this approach do for a man and a family, because he takes real responsibility for his family, because everybody under me that needs me to pour into him, I have to have knowledge to pour into him by studying myself and keeping myself abreast of what's out there so I can teach my children. And now I got great grandchildren, which is a blessing in itself to be able to chance to see them. I got two great grandchildren.
I'm still working on the first grandchild.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful gift though, man. Once grandkids and great-grandchildren, children itself, when you really understand that comes from your loins, your babies, and you get to teach them the right things, it benefits them, especially in our African-American community. There have been so many things that have sent us detours from just going back all the way from civil rights all the way through the welfare era and all those things. All those things are facts, but you can't use them facts to make excuses not to be successful. And a lot of times when you find an ex-offender, a criminal thinking person, they will use facts and use them as excuses for not being able to be successful. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to help. We're going to make you be accountable for what your thought processes or your perception about those things that are historic in nature. Now, what are you going to do to change the historic events of them? Yep. And when you start talking to people like that, that's when life happens. That's when life happens for them. So, you know, as we approach the cyber network and all of the things that you had asked me, I believe that it's possible that this approach is not used enough by therapists. A lot of therapists should be more trained in this, especially like the part about coming out of prison and how do you have a ex-offender to be able to educate himself and open his own business. We teach people how to be consumers versus how to be business people. You should teach that approach because that makes them serve. Consumers make them use people, use the products, but being a business person will make them think about the service that they're giving, the quality of service they're giving to people as an approach to grow. And I just see it as a benefit to use this approach in across the board. I never seen an approach that worked good with men and women like this one does. I use quite a few approaches to do treatment. And I find this one, I always go back to the criminal thinking to deal with, even with women with their emotional drive, they go first with emotions. Men go first with intelligence and intellect. So using women in an emotional way, how to get their intelligence, you owe it to you to be the best version of yourself, honey. You've always doing it for everybody else. Now, when you're going to do it for yourself, has helped women understand, oh, I can take care of myself. Yes. You don't have to take the back seat to your husband. You can be on the front seat with him and be an aid and a helper to him versus always having to take a back seat. And that's a rare spot for a lot of women in recovery. So is in your last words, what would you say and how would you present this criminal thinking thing on the way out the door?
I guess I would say get in touch with myself and Tony Moore and Philip Day and Earl Weaver, our associate producer, to get access to these resources that are really can be used more in the world. Criminalthinking.net is there as a resource that is free for the taking, just a request access. And the other thing I think that is not used enough is Tony as a speaking opportunity for communities and as a lecturer and as a trainer. And so that's one of the reasons I love supporting this podcast is to get your voice and wisdom and experience out there so that we can affect more change in the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Criminal Thinking Deterred with Tony Moore. Visit our website, www.criminalthinking.net. Follow Criminal Thinking on Facebook and Instagram. Also, listen, follow, and download Criminal Thinking Deterred on the major podcast channels. Thank you and have a productive day. Today gonna be better than yesterday. Making memories with my family, getting closer to my goals. Yeah, I gotta make a better way. Yeah. Today gonna be better than yesterday.